Hey guys, and welcome back to an episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Of course, I am your host, Clay. I am tired. I have been, you know, I just had a 12-hour shift at my job, and 12 hours is from 3 p.m. to 3 a.m. I had a 2 to 3 hour nap, and I'm ready to go. How are you, Mark?
I am the opposite of tired. I am so pumped to just to talk to you. Not really.
You know, it sucks because, you know, I was getting ready to leave at 11 o'clock, and then the shift manager for, you know, the third shift just walks up to me with this big smile on his face, and I just knew, I was like, crap, I have to stay. And so I was texting my wife.
Do you have to, or?
Technically, yes. Like, if there is no other option for, because if my third shift needs help, what they do is they take somebody from my shift, and I stay for 4 hours, and then they get somebody from first shift, and they come in 4 hours early. So that way it equals the full 8 hours of that third shift.
Okay.
So we have this thing at work that's just like, hey, if nobody else can stay, then we have like a good four people that are on rotation to stay. I've become one of those reliable people to stay. And it's gotten to the moment where like it's been between me and somebody else. I'm like, oh, you take this one, I'll take the next one.
Okay.
And then that person stays. And then, you know, 2 days later, it's me and a completely different person. I'm like, oh, no. You go ahead and stay. I'll take the next one. And so I'm on top of everybody's list. And so that is why, finally, it's all coming, you know, ahead. And now, you know, every single time somebody needs somebody to stay, I'm on the top of the list for at least another four times. Ugh. So, yeah, it's not fun.
The paycheck will look nice.
Well, yeah. Cause like the way it works is that like, it's actually like double my pay. And so yeah. It's not like regular overtime, but it's like, they call it like on call or whatever. Yeah. So, or call out, whatever. But I mean, yeah, the paycheck will look nice. I just have to wait another 2 weeks for it. So,
so when you've completely forgotten about it, then you just look at the paycheck. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Basically.
And then you can buy the hardcover of Leviathan.
Oh God. No, I actually wrote notes about how horrible this issue of Leviathan is.
Is that notes or a Bible?
No, it's okay. Notes. It's just that many notes. Jeez. Yeah. But speaking of, do you want to get Leviathan out of the way?
If you want to, we can get Leviathan out of the way.
Okay. Let's get Leviathan out of the way. Well, first, I actually want to do something a little bit different. I want to go ahead and plug our stuff in the very beginning of this episode. Because I feel like we can always get lost in the, you know, just splurging of our feelings on these books and everything else. So, of course, if you want to find me, you can find me at Fanboy Clay on Instagram, on Twitter, at Fanboy Comics Pod from my other show. You can also find me on the Batman News Weekly podcast on Anchor, iTunes, anywhere you can find podcasts. Mark, where can they find you?
You can find me at Mark Reads Comics. You can also find me at FFL Pod, which is for the fantasy football show that I do with Jake at Nerdgrounds. Jake. Besides that, also, you know, I'm one of the ones that handle the CB_Legion, which is our comic book site. Comic book Twitter handle. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we're also a part of the Nerdy Legion podcast.
Yes.
I always forget. I'm like, oh, we need to remember. So, yes, we are a part of the Nerdy Legion podcast. Those guys have been awesome to us so far. Really great guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of great shows. So if you are ever interested in listening to content outside of DC Comics, then I would say that there's plenty of shows there, from Dynamite to Valiant to Aftershock, the guys at Indie Alley, they kind of touch everything in a lot of Kickstarters. So if you want to go ahead and check those out, yeah, nerdylegion.com. But who is the man behind the mask? All is revealed.
It is still unimportant after the reveal. I'll just say that.
Yeah. I mean, that was the one thing that I really wanted, like, this story to be the end. But, I mean, I guess you can kind of, you knew there this book was obviously going to have, you know, an aftermath because of how slow this has been. This issue, this was literally an event just to let you know all the government, all the agencies are gone.
This,
and, hey, the bad guy was revealed Bendis, on, like, page 17 of 20.
Legit, this was Bendis saying, hey, just a reminder, I'm also writing Action Comics.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all this book was.
Yeah, so it was...
like, and...
And I gotta say, I didn't even really... I mean, besides certain threads, this was also kind of a bummer, because I think that this was Alex Maleev's weakest work. Because everything that you've seen in this issue, I mean, issues 1 through 5, say what you want, they're gorgeous to look at. This one felt, I was like, wow, this is the one that has all the payoffs. Sure, there are some nice moments, but anyways, really what's important here, there's two things that are semi-important, I guess, in terms of the grand scheme of things. Number one is we finally somewhat get an answer in regards to what did Lex give Lois? Because Lex, a long time ago in Action Comics, presented himself kind of like how he's done with every other villain, and presented him with her with a gift. But you never knew what the gift was. And then there was a long time, I mean, I think every comic book website and their mamas were writing about, is Lois Lane a villain? Oh, is she going to betray Superman? That's what everybody was talking about. Because why would Lex present her with something? Well, here we kind of see Lois and Clark kind of talking about it. A little bit about her father, who passed away, and kind of like his involvement in regards to all of this. But really, another thing was the box, and what did Lex present himself with? And but you didn't get anything. There was no resolution. Then
nope.
I don't even care about the stuff that was happening with Kate Spencer. I mean, sure, I guess in a sense they kind of give you a little bit of a history lesson of what the Manhunters are and how they were kind of like the Guardians and the Green Lanterns before that was a thing. But okay, I mean, whatever, who cares?
But that's exactly it. At this point, I don't care. Yeah. Like, that is the one thing I wrote in my notes here. Not only does Bendis not know how to write Superman, Batman, Damian, Lois, or Talia, but he had angles in this book that were actually interesting, and he did nothing to it. For one, Batgirl. He had a very interesting point with her being inside of Leviathan.
And also the way that it was presented with the Leviathan rising, when you were seeing like the pure fear in Malcolm Merlyn's eyes talking about Leviathan, and how...
Yeah.
I forgot who was it that was... Who spoke? Was it Lex? Who spoke with Barbara? That was kind of... Or no, was that Leviathan?
It was Leviathan.
Yeah, okay. So he was the one that's speaking to her, and he was convincing her, where I was like, oh, man, I can't wait. And then I think it was issue 4. You see her, like, speaking in the background.
Yeah, you see her talking to the group of detectives in the Batcave, and she's like, oh, I'm in their ranks, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that.
That would have been a really nice issue.
But we didn't get anything. Yeah. She legit, the only reason why she was in their ranks was to jump on his back at the very end of the issue.
Yeah.
That was it. She didn't attack, she didn't hit, she didn't fight, she didn't do anything. All I saw her do was jump on Leviathan's back, flip off his back, and that was the last thing you saw.
It was quite disappointing. I mean, I will say I like the reveal of it being Mark Shaw. One, because I'm a fan of, you know, the older works, but again, this is who I have in regards to the first appearance with all my Jack Kirby stuff. So I like him. I like him being somebody who was like a public defender. He has kind of worked in regards to this. He was somebody that has very close ties to Sam Lane And he has just seen all the shadiness that has gone on, and he's tired of it. And he's trying to, you know, bring that all down. I like that reveal, and I like he, if there is somebody who would have an issue with all these agencies, it can be somebody that's within, who, yes, has abilities and, you know, has powers, but he also knows all the ins and outs and knows how corrupted, you know, all these agencies are. So it all works out great. It's just the execution was poorly done. And this was, and this is coming from someone that I was like, dude, all right, man, I'm still intrigued. I'm still intrigued. Issue 5 was kind of like what broke me, because I was like, oh, God, like this. Because then I realized this is going to continue. And I don't mind that there's small little threads. I mean, for example, we're still getting threads of metal with Snyder. But it, yeah. It's kind of like, yeah. It's not, I just feel that now, I mean, clearly it shows that at the end of this book, he is still going to play, and he's playing an even bigger part, and it's going to start in the following issue of Action Comics or
Leviathan Dawn. I'm like,
yeah, it's, so it's a bummer, because it looks like there was a huge tease for an event tease to now go to this, and I'm like, all right, now we're getting to the, yeah, Bendis always does the long game, but there's been no resolution to anything. So I don't mind if there's an effect, but I mean, at least with like the Batman Who Laughs, he's interesting, and there's just stuff has gone on, and there's been endings, and sure, maybe he's appearing again in something else, but at least we've had, you know, like a resolution in regards to whatever one part of the story is. Here, there really hasn't been anything. I mean, I'm interested to see. I'm like, oh man, Guardian's here. So Guardian clearly is playing a part in now, it as well. So,
but here's the thing. So I have not been liking Action or Superman. That's obvious. Event Leviathan was Bendis's like real way to say, hey, Clay, I'm going to impress you so much that you're going to want to read some stuff that I write. Well, guess what? By issue 4, issue 5, I seriously don't care.
No, I think you gave up a lot earlier than I did.
Oh, no, I did.
Like issue 2. You were already contemplating dropping everything. And I think by 3 is when you're like, you know what, I'm done with everything that he's Superman-wise.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But to see, if I was already not reading Action, I was already not reading Superman, and at the very end to say, hey, I'm going to be in Action. Like, I genuinely don't care about this character. I feel like because of how issue 4 and 5 ended, this issue and the reveal was a little obvious. I know there were spoilers out and people were already getting the actual reveal out there to the people or whatever. I
mean, and kudos to that person from Screen Rant with all that investigative journalism. Like, they knew it was a Manhunter, so they didn't know who, but I would say with all the research that was done, I would say, like, you know, kudos to them, because I thought that was a great job. Actually, you know what? Let me see here. I wanted to do actually a shout-out. We never really do shout-out, but I think that's one of the reasons why, is because we never really push for people to kind of like rate and review us on iTunes. But we on October 11th from Best Brown Bear, got a 5-star, you know, great podcast discussing the things I want to hear, excited for the future. So for us not doing that, thank you, Great Brown Bear. What do you see? I just wanted
dude, I read that book to a little kid that my wife takes care of. I see a yellow bird
looking at me.
Yes.
Yeah. Love that book, man. That book's the goat. Anyways, so yeah, I don't know why I saw it. I think it's because somebody asked me what podcast do I do? Because they have like a 9-year-old kid that loves DC. I'm like, "Wow, that's never what 9-year-old likes DC?" So I was like, "Holy crap.
They cannot listen to us."
Yeah, well, they can't listen to you. I'll show them earlier when you were baptized. So yeah, I happened to see it, and I'm like, oh crap, because we never push it. Well, if you guys would happen to want to now, yeah, you guys can go rate, review, you know, our podcast. Yeah,
rate, review. Kevin's there like 1-star.
Clay's a bitch. And so anyways, yeah, so I saw the 5-star and I was like, oh wow, this is awesome. So I wanted to say thank you and sorry it took a month, best brown bear. But I got you, man. Or
that's awesome.
Girl. Sorry. 2019, I gotta be careful. Jeez. I'm a mess. But, so Leviathan, he sucks, huh?
Yeah, and I will say this. Leviathan as a group, literally no threat whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean he was just talking a lot. I mean, I think that now
he was all talk, no bite, and at the very end.
Well, I mean he did have bite. I mean, we still don't know exactly what happened to those hundreds and thousands of people that were like eviscerating and
we do. They are a part of Leviathan. That was the whole point of the book, was that they were getting members of these facilities and turning them into Leviathan, whether it be under mind control or whatever.
No. I know. That's why that their part, army is so big. But I mean, like, you haven't really like seen what can be done. Like that. That's what I meant. Like, so I don't know what this Leviathan Dawn means. I'm assuming sooner or later you're gonna have to see a little bit more of them instead of it just telling you. Because whatever. I mean, I don't know. Although I am disappointed, I'm not going to lie to you and say I'm not curious to see what's going to happen, because I'm a sucker for my own headcanon at times, and I like to see what happens. And I don't know, man. It's like there's something in me that still likes Bendis. I don't know if I'm just holding on to all this nostalgia. And I'm probably like those 90s X-Men fans that still think Chris Claremont's a good writer. I don't know. I think it's maybe one of those things. I don't know. But no matter what happens, I'm like, I see Guardian and I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be cool. All right. I'm like, I see Harper. I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. What's going to happen? So I'm like, okay, am I finally going to see something? Okay, maybe I can turn. But right now it's on the scale's going down. But again, I like Mark Shaw. So it's one of those things that I'm like, okay, I can see why it would be him.
Again, want to make another point. Not knowing how to write Lois or Superman, but also Bendis needs to stop breaking the stupid fourth wall.
Wait, when did he do it?
When he was telling Superman not to write the story and to just tell it. And she's like, oh, this isn't some, you know, like these characters, I understand, like these are their lives.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're pushing a story.
Yeah.
And that's how he's portraying these characters, as if they know that they're pushing a story.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm just like, God, Bendis, like if this is how DC wants to make their characters, like every single one of them in the future breaking the fourth wall, looking at us, winking, you know, doing really, you know, stupid, classic Golden Age stuff, which I know Bendis likes. I know Bendis is just like, you know, he was freaking born in the 1800s and he grew up with, you know, the birth of comics or whatever. But he just needs to stop. I don't like these characters because of that. Like, I'm starting to really dislike these characters because they're portrayed in such a way that, like, I almost hate them in the way that I hate my wife watching reality TV. Like, watching Bravo. Jeez. Like, yeah. It's getting to that point where I'm just like, God, these people are stupid.
Okay. I'm surprised that you didn't mention actually, like, when Damian saw Talia.
Did you bring lunch?
I'm like,
yeah, that's
see, the thing is, like, now I'm reading, I read Bendis, and I'm like, all right, this is gonna piss off Clay. This episode's gonna be so much fun.
But that's what I mean when I say he doesn't know how to write Damian, Talia. You know, because he made Talia when she was fighting Manhunter, Spencer, what'd she say? She said, like, that basically that big FU moment or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm effing Talia Al Ghul or whatever, or I'm the League of
Shadows or something.
League of Shadows, yeah. Not Talia, not at all. And I'm sorry, but the whole sign language thing, I thought was really dumb as well.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, a lot of books have been trying to push this, and I think the one that really did it well was back when, of course, we learned that Hawkeye was hearing impaired, and they showed a lot of that in his books. That was cool. I really enjoyed that. They showed the actual sign language in the book, and this, just because of the way they're talking to each other in sign language, doesn't sound like any of these characters. And so it just bothered me. It really did bother me.
I hear you. It's, and you know, for it being everything, you know, as much as they were trying to tease everything, it was a bummer to see how long it took for all this to happen and nothing really happened, and now it's going to continue. So it's kind of, if you've been liking Leviathan, then you're bound to be happy because it's still going on. If you hate it like Clay, or if you're, you know, bummed like I am, then yeah, it's still going on. So just know that it's still going on. Well, something that didn't take long to read, the Batman's Grave number 2. So here we are, Warren Ellis, Brian Hitch, Alex Sinclair. This is probably the fastest comic I have ever read in my life. And I gotta say, I enjoyed the hell out of it. And one is because we got to see Brian Hitch in all his glory. And also, this was a book that I did not read when it came out. I don't know why, but I read it like back to back with this one. So seeing, you know, the way everything ended last issue to how it was here, I am 100% like convinced. Like I dig this, you know, the Eater of Faces. Like, he doesn't really have a name yet, but I gotta say, this is the dude that should not be able to go toe-to-toe with Batman. And I think we go 12 to 13 pages where that's all that they're doing, and he is holding his own. And it's just, it's really creepy because you know that this is a dude that, like, eats. He's like a carnivore, so he's just, like, eating the people, like, his prey. And it's really, really, really disgusting. And there's actually one panel where you actually see him actually holding onto Batman's face. And he's like, try harder to make me feel something. And the reason why it's so disturbing is because of his teeth. The way that, the way Brian like Hitch wrote it, it doesn't look like his teeth are connected, but they're like sharpened. And you see the blood and you see like the debris of like people pieces on his mouth. That is one of the more horrifying. And I know that Batman looks like stoic, but it actually, to me, like, I wish those are one of those panels that I can kind of see him just be like just disgusted by this guy's face. But that panel is like my favorite panel of this issue.
Well, I really like, you know, we got a lot of Brian Hitch with Rebirth and Justice League, and of course, most recently with Hawkman. I'm really starting to dig his art, but I really love, you know, like you said, when he says, try to make me feel something, just like the intensity in his eyes. Ooh, and love it. Like, and you know, the light scar that he has on his forehead, yeah. Like, it really does, like, oh, snap. Like, what kind of person is this guy? And I'm just going to go on record, you know, because we get this whole 12 to 13 page fight. Then we get Batman going to drop him off at GCPD. And, like, the police are, like, starting to draw their weapons. And I'm not entirely sure if I like that. Like, and I understand that in the Batman mythos, some cops like him, some cops don't.
Yeah.
You know, Gotham is still, you know, up in the air about vigilantism, even though they really, you know, rely on Batman for a lot of things in Gotham. So I'm not really sure how I feel about, you know, the guns, the police starting to pull their guns. But, you know, we get this whole thing with Alfred and with Gordon. You know, we get a lot of information at the end of the book to push the story forward. I want to go ahead and make the prediction now that with this being a 12-issue series, Ellis is trying to make another Long Halloween, another Batman Hush, and I'm going to say that the end of this book is going to be connected to either the Face Eater or the dead guy at the very beginning of first issue.
Yeah, quite possibly.
I want to go ahead and make that prediction now, just so when it does happen, I can say I told you so.
Timestamp it. But, I mean, I got to say also, sometimes when I saw that panel that you were talking about in regards to the cops with the guns, sometimes, like, I see those kind of things, I'm like, is he trying to go political here? Like, is this a political stance that, you know, there's just some...
I was kind of thinking that as well.
Like a reactionary cop that instead of, you know, trying to assess the situation or anything, they're very quick to get their gun. So,
yeah.
I mean, those are the kind of things that, you know, you never really know what they're trying to do. And I guess unless he answers it, we're never really going to know. But I can see, like, sometimes, like, those little things. It was a little too, like, I feel like I've never seen that before. Like, I mean, obviously, you see things like in Curse of the White Knight and stuff like that. Yes, there's been times that cops are pissed at Batman and they're trying to. But like, there's been nothing in this story that kind of like leads to like why would that something like that happen? That it kind of just makes me feel like are you trying to, you know, say something with that panel? So I mean,
yeah.
But besides that, man, I mean, I dug it. I mean, I thought that it was a nice quick read. Sometimes, you know, a quick read is really nice and it's refreshing. Because, you know, sometimes you'll get other books kind of like the one we just discussed where it kind of just goes on and it doesn't stop.
And I know that I kind of like swept over it, but I really like the interaction between Alfred and Bruce in this one because of how Alfred was acting in the first one. It was very unlike him for what we've been seeing in the past, you know, decade or so. You know, he was getting very aggressive and he was just like, I hate, you know, how you're doing things, and I hate that you're, you know, having to be out there and sacrificing yourself. And here he makes the joke, hey, I got an excellent plan. Why don't you stay home? You can drink this entire bottle, and I will go out
in the Cape and Cow. Underprivileged criminals. Yeah. No, I thought, and the thing is like, I see, like, a panel like that, and it makes me, especially with the news that I think it was teased yesterday or, like, 2 days ago, with like the in memory of Alfred that they're going to like Tom Taylor.
Oh yeah. The Pennyworth RIP or something. Yeah, like that.
It bummed me out because it lets me know that it wasn't a swerve in Tom King's run. Cause I figured if anything, it would have been like, oh, well, Doomsday Clock's going to erase that with whatever's going to happen leading to this thing. But I'm like, oh man, that's real.
Yep.
Freaking blows. So now it's more which actually gets me surprised, because I mean, you're seeing Tom Taylor now, he's like posting all these cryptic, like the unkillables, like are we just going to be getting like a whole bunch of little teases? You know, it's going to be deceased connected, because
oh yeah, no, it yeah. is like, because he did it like in a way of like a puzzle, and like you could clearly see after a couple of things were unveiled or whatever that it was a zombie-esque or a deceased Red Hood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he called it deceased unkillable. And my first thought was, wow, that didn't take long. Like, for there to be a spinoff. And we made the prediction. I'm pretty sure we've said it on here. We feel like deceased is just going to be Tom Taylor's Injustice.
Yeah, it's his next one. I mean, this is...
Yeah,
I mean, he's really good at building his own world and letting him have his playground. And he did an amazing job with Injustice, and he's doing a great job with this one. So it's even cooler because this one feels to have more stakes, you know, just because you don't want to see one of your beloved become deceased. But anyways, talking about that, so when seeing like Alfred, I feel like I just need to cherish these little moments that we have left. Because, I mean, it could be a while before we see Alfred again, because you know he's going to get revived. and Batman's going to do something to, because the comics. But it's just it's going to be a bummer that we're not going to see him for a while. So that's why a certain interactions like that were nice to see.
For sure.
But stepping away from Batman, because I know that you wanted to talk briefly Detective Comics. I got to say that so far the second ongoing from the Black Label, from the Hill House, from Joe Hill, I got to say the Dollhouse Family, this was a great, great book. This was a book that I actually saw the first page, and I was like, okay, let me jump into the world. It looks like it's going to be a little too fantastical, and it's actually not. I mean, it throws us right in. I mean, you get a little bit of a like back then into now, but really the main essence of this story, not to go too deep into it, is that there is a family, and they are, due to somebody that passed away, one of their, like, the family's aunt, she has a dollhouse that was from the 1800s, and in her will she has it where it would be going to her daughter. Now, with that being said, the husband is kind of already, he already knows that this right here, with this being considered a like an antique, he's like, we should get this valued. But the daughter, when you're seeing the daughter's face and she absolutely falls in love with it, you know, the mom's like, how are we possibly going to take this away? Look at her face. But he's like, I don't remember us ever agreeing that this is just going to be hers. She's like, well, it is hers because it's in the will. He's like, well, let me see that. So I'm like, all right, so the husband's already kind of a problem. And I'm like, all right, so let me see what's going to happen here. Lo and behold, you happen to see, while the little girl is playing with her dolls, and she's now giving every single one of them a name, character traits, you tend to see in the background that the husband and wife do not have a great relationship. Mainly because of the husband. He is one abusive dude, and he just sucks. He's just trash. So in regards to that, there's been this mysterious cat that's always like showing up and kind of like... And he even asked the question, like, what, like, can we get this cat? Or, like, what is this cat? Like, why are we feeding it? Why is it always coming here? With that being said, there's, you know, there's a lot of flashbacks in regards to kind of like, I think the heritage of where this is, like, the story, I believe, of like where this dollhouse came from. And you learning a little bit of these certain characters, because, yes, there is a supernatural element to this, which is, spoiler alert, The characters inside the dollhouse actually are alive. And they actually speak with the little girl. And the little girl is, you know, I guess the little characters kind of like invite her to come inside the house. And she's like, well, I can't, I'm too big. And she's like, oh, that's nonsense, just say like the magic words. And there's a little combination. And now she's one with the family. And you're like, oh, God, this is like Puppet Master or something. Like, I just figured like something really bad's going to go on. And there might still be, but it looks like in regards to all of that, there is like this mysterious black door, like the black room. And that right there, I think, is what's leading to the supernatural stuff that we're seeing in the past time, where, she's kind of like, I guess, contemplating, and they actually run into like this evil spirit thing that you see, from the beginning of the book, that he looks like just like Ben Grimm. And with that, they're kind of giving a, how do I say it? Like an alternative, like, listen, hey, your father, he's scum, and I can get rid of him for you if you just make the pledge to stay in this house forever. And she's like, but what about my mom? And she's like, well, I don't want my mom to be alone. Well, if you don't, he's going to kill her. And she's like, yeah, but if not, I don't want her to be sad, because she'll be like looking for me. So she says the words that bring her back, and now she's like a full-grown adult. But with that, the thing is that now I think since she's entered that portal, now the, I guess you could say, like, the spirit that's in there now has, like, free access to her mind. Where he or she can continuously say, like, listen, we can always fix these things, you know, do it for your mom. Well, it looks like this girl, I believe her name was Lally or Lala, something like that. Lolly.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like she took matters into her own hands. And while her father wasn't looking, She grabbed the hammer and bashed his skull. And that's where we got, that's where it ends. And I'm like, yes, give this to me. I love it. I love these old, I kind of feel like I'm reading with the first one, basket full of heads. In this, yeah. I don't know why I feel like I'm just reading like Goosebumps, like just like it's yes. kind of. I don't want to say it's a young adult, but I just it's like one of those things that I kind of just feel like these are stories that I read like in those like the Goosebumps series.
Yeah, it's like a horror anthology.
Yes,
type.
Horror anthologies. That's the perfect way to say it, and it feels very. You know, it feels very cinematic, although, you know, the art's not giving you grand scope, but these just seem like really good tight.
Well, like this, I will say the actual art for these books are very reminiscent to what classic horror genre art should be. Absolutely. And so it gives you that feel, and I really, really appreciate it for that reason.
Yeah, like, this is not something that should look, you know, too pretty. Like, Dan Mora should not be on these books.
Man, you're always going to do that. You're always going to do that. You know, I was actually thinking about it, like, as you were talking, I was like, I wonder if they would try to make a horror comic with a modern artist, and I don't think it'll work. I genuinely, like, it would look cool for, like, when things are getting sliced off and, like, people are being beheaded and things like that. It would look pretty cool. But just the feeling overall, I just don't think they could capture that.
Yeah, it's really hard to have, like, high-level, like, stylization in a book like this. But, again,
yeah,
it's a strong story, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But talking about a book that looks pretty, Far Sector.
Ugh, man.
Now, this book,
Jamal Campbell is a great artist.
Amazing. Like, I think kudos from him going to Naomi to this. I mean, this dude can draw cosmic. Anytime he wants to do cosmic, let him do it. Because I am.
Yeah,
I'm all for it.
With colors, man. Anything with colors, I just like. With bright colors, just because of the way his art is, it just makes it shine that much more.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I will say that this story by N.K. Jemisin, who's an established author but is also like a psychologist, I have to say this book kind of felt, especially with the narratives, it kind of felt like if she was actually sitting down talking to a shrink, where she's like saying a story and she's like, well, we all know that narratives, yes, am I confusing you yet? Or like, they're trying to like tell you like how the story is going to unfold and how they just throw you in the middle of something and then they kind of like backtrattle. The story to me felt all over the place. Like, I think it kind of like threw you into the fire. And if it wasn't for the council of meetings with the Na, like, and it felt very, that felt too on the nose, the Na or the I was like, ugh, yeah,
I think this writer, like, I feel like they're like, hey, I want to do a Green Lantern story, but I want to make an original. And they're like, okay, well, you know, we have six lanterns on Earth. You know, why don't you make a story that is very spacey, that is very alien? And they tried a little too hard with the alien stuff.
Yeah, they tried a little too hard, but they also did a little bit. They also tried hard to make it seem like she's not part of the like, any ones of the sectors, because she's like, oh, I don't even know the number,
which doesn't make any sense because she's from Earth. She makes these references to New York City, and like, I'm interested in her story, but I honestly am not interested because she's just another Earth Lantern.
So,
like, to be completely honest,
I think it was really hard. I think that this. Man, it's just, I was mesmerized by the art. So it's one of those things that this book doesn't do too much. And I think it does too much of trying to show you how, what's her name? They didn't even say her first name. Malane, what's her last name again? Milan?
Her first name is Joe.
Joe Milan? Malane?
I don't know how to pronounce the last name. Mullane or Mullane or one of those.
Mullane, Mullane, Malone, Mulan, whatever.
Yeah.
I think, like I was saying, like they're just trying to get you in her head, understand her psyche. They're kind of like introducing you to somebody who can potentially be an issue. Outside of that, yes, because there's been a murder in regards to what happened. Like, there's been a murder in this world, and now they're trying to figure out how to do it because they kind of referenced something that we all know about the Guardians, about the emotions and how they try to remove emotions out of it. Well, this is now, like, because of this huge galactic war within these three species that they all, like, hated each other, they, once they, like, collided and everything was, like, destroyed, they had to work together to create...
They basically made their own council.
Yeah, they made their own council, their own world and everything out of the remnants of what was destroyed, and they have literally removed, even though she says they removed the emotions, but they looked petty as hell in their arguments.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, meat eater, or I don't know what it was. So, I don't know. I think I just need to be a little bit more invested into the world. And once I can know this character a little bit more, I mean, they went balls to the wall because they're, you know, this, when they went to go see the killer was clearly assassinated by some mystical figure, black figure. And now, you know, Joe Milan is going to, you know, go over. And now I can't wait to see the action sequences of a chase with the world. So in terms of the look of the book, I can't wait to read number two. But yeah, I think I just need to, when they're throwing you into a world... My favorite thing is on an issue number one, and it could be a reason why, like, something for a reason, like, I really enjoyed, like, issue two of Batman's Grave. I love when the first couple of pages are very minimal to no dialogue at all, because I like to just process the world that I'm in. In something...
Get immersed. Yes.
So when there's something like this, and I'm immediately being thrown a lot of dialogue, and I'm trying to learn, I'm like... What am I supposed to learn here? The world of the character? Like, let me learn one thing at a time. And it didn't do it. So I think that Jamal Campbell's art saved this book in terms of, like, wanting me to see it again. But the writer didn't do a good enough job to get me excited if this person is to be the 5G Green Lantern. Then they failed horribly on that regards.
Because like you said, it very much sounded like, you know, this Joe Milan or Lantern Milan or whatever is talking to somebody that has not been revealed yet, or at all, unless it's like some diary entry or something.
Dude, it's fourth wall breaking. She could. I'm joking. Go ahead.
She could be talking to the Guardians. We don't know. But because of the way the dialogue was with that and with how she speaks just overall, it was very confusing. And
like I hope that it's something like a Jon Stewart. Like maybe she's talking to like a Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see her going back to Earth and being like, "Hey, this is what happened." Yeah. But I genuinely, you know, like you said, the art was, I was turning each page because of the art.
Yeah.
I was wanting to learn more through that, more than through the story. Because, you know, just the way, like I said, I feel like this writer was trying a little too hard with the alien speak and with, you know, being a little too galactical. Yeah. And so I kind of got lost in that. And I'm like, you know what, let me just enjoy this with the art. I'll still try to push forward with the story. I love that panel where, you know, the killer is all bloodied up and, you know, blood is splattered everywhere, but that last splash page of, you know, Joe like running, I really love that. And you know, I really can't wait to see how this chase is gonna turn out as far as the art. So
yeah, so we'll see. But there's actually something I wanted to address, and we can talk about this book next. I'll talk about it quickly, and then you could touch on Detective, which is actually Superman 17. Because Superman 17, now that I'm kind of going over it again, I think I mixed some of my memory in regards to the dialogue in regards to the gift by Lex Luthor. That actually happened in Superman 17. So the dialogue in the beginning of Leviathan was really just her and was she realized with Sam Lane? Like, was she discovered with Sam Lane in regards to his involvement with Leviathan? So my bad whenever you read that part, because it's going to sound like I'm insane. So all of that stuff had to do with Superman, which what I said. And I guess the only thing I guess we could talk about besides that, with her getting the reveal, not really knowing, is Superman wants her to open it. She wants him to, like, let this be her. This is her thing. He's really worried. He wants to know because it's Lex Luthor. And she's like, no, I'm the one that has to do it. And they just decide, okay, let's fly again. Let's fly together. So that's what they did. Besides that, we get some more, you know, like Star Labs and, you know, some person. I feel like I've seen her before. Miss Gloria, I think they've tried to, like, turn her into, like, the next Amanda Waller. But they're not doing a good job at it. It's just, like, a white version, and it looks, like, the same. Like, if they just literally just changed colors. Because even the hairstyle is kind of, like, a mini white version of a fro. Like, it's just, like, I don't believe this Miss Glory thing to be, like, a threat. But she's really just talking about that whenever Superman disappears, their profits have never been better. So they're like, oh, when he was in the Phantom Zone, which I'm assuming they're referencing maybe more of, like, Tomasi stuff. Because I don't think, has Bendis ever had Superman in the Phantom Zone? Oh, maybe during the Rogal Czar stuff. That's right. Yeah. So during that time, when they're referencing that, they're like, oh, yeah, our profits have never been better. And then with that being said, they kind of, like, he just spans to, like, all the people that are working there. And Superman is literally doing nothing, just hovering over it, and everyone's panicking. Just trying to show the power that Superman has on how he can instill fear by just being there. So everyone's just panicking and being more than happy to, you know, throw everybody under the bus. And then you got a Clark Kent article, pretty much just telling you exactly what you're seeing in the art. Besides that, you got Superman kind of meets up with Kara, and they're kind of having a conversation, and it looks like Clark really has something that he wants to share with her. But before all of that, they actually travel to New Krypton, and they see everything that, you know, Zod has done with his family, Ursa and child. And, you know, it's a little weird, and I'm happy to see that at least Kara said, like, listen, I'm not going to, although this is beautiful and everything that you've done, I'm not going to forget that you have been trying to kill me and my cousin for the last X amount of years. But even though with a hesitation, you know, Clark is, you know, at least willing to accept, like, hey, this is beautiful, like, what you've done. And it does. It looks really good. And, you know, Zod, you never really know. You never really know what his intentions are. But besides that, it just goes to the point where Superman, this is the part one of what's going to be the reveal of him revealing his identity. So one of the things that he wants to speak with Kara is that the decision that he's about to make is going to obviously be an impact on her. And you never really know what it is, but she's like, you know, do you want to know? She's like, yes, I want to know. Are you sure? Yes. He's like, you shocked? Like, tell me. Like, he's like, well, seriously, it's about, and then it says next issue, the truth. But it looks like, I'm not entirely sure, but I believe that there was, like, a little boy hiding, like, under.
Yeah, that's Zod's son.
Okay, yeah, I was trying to see if Zod's son was wearing a yellow, but it looks like he might potentially hear exactly who Clark is. So that's, you know.
Well, no, I think more so what they're trying to do is he'll tell his father and say, hey, Kal-El is going to tell, you know, the world his secret identity. And then Zod will, you know, probably
try to stop it.
You know, I don't think it'll stop it. I think he'll try to, you know, use it in his favor.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but I mean, because it's not important to Zod that people know that he's Clark, because in reality, he knows him as Kal in his Kryptonian heritage. So,
true.
You know,
true.
I don't think it would, you know, bother him at all, but I think he would definitely use it to his advantage at that point. You know, I'm not a huge fan of this book at all. Didn't read it. And this whole narrative of oh, Superman thinks Mark Shaw is a really good guy, and the fact that, you know, he wanted to tell Superman the truth really opened his heart to, you know what, I'm going to tell the truth to the whole world. Like, it's just stupid.
Yeah, so I'm not...
So...
Yeah, this was... I don't know. It's not that much fun reading, like, Superman comics anymore. I mean, I read it to read it because I still want to know what's happening in his life and what's going to happen. But, I mean, the yawn that you are doing right now is a pretty good estimate of, like, how this book is. It's just, it's there to be there, but it's, I mean, Kevin Maguire. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kevin Maguire. I didn't like this. I didn't like his work here, like, at all. I don't know.
It looked really weird.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I opened it just now, it looked really weird. I thought, for some reason, I thought it was Adam Hughes.
Yeah, it does. But, it does have a little bit of like where I can see that, but yeah, I mean, there's just, I think, one panel where you see him like patrolling, when Superman's patrolling, and he's kind of like seeing what's going on with all of his teammates. That one, okay, yeah. Beautiful pick. But besides that, I thought it was a weak looking book, a weak story. Yeah, it's just weak. Anyways, I've kind of given up on Detective. I know I was intrigued by the first couple, but I honestly don't really want to know what's going on with Nora. I kind of...
Well, and that's the most dissatisfying thing about this issue, unfortunately. You know, we got the reveal that, you know, she is Mrs. Freeze now, and you're like, oh, snap, you know, what got her to this point? And in here, you know, we see a lot of internal dialogue of Mr. Freeze realizing how quickly Nora is getting used to the idea of being a villain and having power. We also get, you know, Lucius, Bruce, and Alfred attempting to find a cure for these women that Mr. Freeze had tested on to try to get Nora, you know, unfrozen. And, you know, Lucius believes he has something, but he needs to test it. And he's like, you know what? I need to test it on that cow. And you see the bat cow, and Bruce is like, no, not the cow. Not any animal. We need to test it on a human. And not any human. We need to test it on me. And so Alfred shoots him with the freeze gun that he has, and they inject him with the serum. He is able to get de-thawed, but his arm is still numb.
Okay.
And we see Nora and, you know, Victor again out in the middle of nowhere. And Victor, Mr. Freeze, is like, hey, you know, we need to just do one more job to have enough money. And then we're going to move to Alaska and we're going to have a life. Batman is not going to be on our tail anymore. We're not going to have to do crimes. We're going to live a long and happy life. And Nora's like, well, a new life, you know, I just wanted to live a life under, you know, my own terms. You didn't give me that. And what if I like this power now? And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't need you. And so she leaves. And even Mr. Freeze, like, shoots at her and says, you know, I love you with every bone in my body, and I'm not going to let you leave. And she says, well, fine, shoot me. Do something about it. And he doesn't do anything because he loves her. And she says, well, I definitely can't have you following me. And so she freezes him. And they, when I say they, Bruce, Lucius, and Alfred are still trying to figure out, you know, why they can't get the feeling back in Bruce's arm. And all of a sudden, they see the bat signal. He goes to the roof of the GCPD. He sees that it is Victor. And Victor says, hey, I need you to help me with my wife. She has gone off the deep end. I just want her back. I've done a lot of really crappy things to a lot of, you know, people. And it looks, you know, like your arm is, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, how to save the women that I tested. And so he says, help me and I'll help you, basically. And he gives Batman an injection. He gets feeling in his arms. They save the women. And the next thing you know, Freeze and Batman are going to team up in the next issue to stop Nora in Cold Dark World Icebreaker. And it's well, that was this issue, Icebreaker. The next issue is in Cold Blood.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say the last panel with Freeze and the Hellbat. It looks nice. Yeah. But...
Yeah, it looks really good, but here's the issue that I have with this issue. Nora turned way too fast.
Big time.
As far as and not in the sense of like turning evil, but in the fact of like F you, Mr. Freeze kind of thing, you know? And so I believe that Jim over at Weird Science made this prediction. He thought that, you know, when she was, you know, taking off her helmet in Absolute Zero, that it did some brain damage. But from what Victor is saying, he believes that the serum that Lex Luthor gave him to help Nora, that is, in fact, messing with her brain psychologically. And so
she kind of has, like, the gift.
Yeah, she has the gift that... Luther gave her, him. And so what this does and what this I feel like will end up being is basically they're going to fight her and they're going to decide the only way to save her is to put her on ice. And so she is just going back to where she was two issues before this. And that kind of sucks. You know, Tomasi had a really cool thing in a really new way of bringing Nora out, and that has not been done.
The thing is, just like if you have Nora out, what's Mr. Freeze?
And I'm okay. Like honestly, I would have been okay with Mr. Freeze leaving and like him like not being a villain anymore, because then you could be like, oh, you know, this other person tries to be Mr. Freeze, and. You know, Victor's ego gets in the way and is like, oh, hell no, I'm the only Mr. Freeze. And, you know, we get Mr. Freeze back. Yeah. But there was nothing here. And I hope that I'm wrong in the sense that, you know, they put Nora back on ice. But I feel like that's where it's going.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. So. I've lost interest. And there's just certain things. I think Tomasi... Even though the first two issues were interesting with Detective, I mean, I think Tomasi overall, his stuff on even Abby Arcane. Whoever Arkham's like daughter was, I'm forgetting her name.
Yeah.
That was interesting, kind of fell off. Those little one shots were horrible. I don't know. I've just Detective's like blah.
I will say Brad Walker is coming back to Detective, which I'm excited for. You know, I enjoyed his art.
I don't like his art for Batman, but it's...
Well, you know what, Mark? Yeah.
But it's all right. It's all good. I mean, hey, the man's got to work, so let him do his thing, and you can enjoy it.
Hey, he did a good job with the Tales of the Dark Multiverse, the Superman story. So,
no, that's,
you know,
true. He did good. I mean, I talked about that. I didn't even read The Blackest Night. I mean, I know I talked with you about it, but it was one of those things that...
That was the one thing that we were going... I feel like we would have talked about, but that book was 50 pages long, and I just...
I mean, it's,
oh,
and not only
God,
is it 50 pages long, but it's also... They kind of did a far sector where they're throwing you right into the middle of the Blackest Night event. And just with a twist. And I don't know. I guess it's just like I've accepted that event for what it was, and it was great. And the best thing that came out of it was, you know, you got Aquaman back, Martian Manhunter back. You know, you got like some of these characters. But I think Blackest Night to me was one of those events that were good for when it was. And like I'm good with it, you know? Like I don't need to... Or maybe Blackest Night just didn't have that big of an effect on me in terms of like... I mean, I love the event and I have all the tie-ins. But I don't know. I just didn't care about the what if kind of story with
don't
this event.
Don't let Jake hear you say that, man. That's his favorite book.
No, I mean, again, Blackest Night is a great event, and I love the event. But I just didn't care enough about what the Dark Multiverse version of it would be. I mean, because it's already a dark, so like to find like another twist to it, I don't know why. I just I didn't care for it. I mean, obviously, I'm gonna enjoy the death of Superman because that's one of my favorite stories and very influential in my fandom. I don't even remember if I enjoyed Nightfall because I was on vacation. I don't even think I read it.
It was interesting. I will say that it was interesting. They did a like 30-year time jump from the story, and so like I feel like the real story was, you know, where it initially started and where it could have gone from there, but you know, they decided just to do a 30-year time jump. That's fine, you know, that's completely up to them. It's DC Comics, whatever. But because of how the, you know, Blackest Night ended up, I don't know how I feel about Infinite Crisis coming up, and that story being in the Dark Multiverse, you know. So
I just want to see Superboy.
We'll
Prime.
See.
So if they show Superboy Prime, okay.
But see, it looks more of like a Blue Beetle story, like how Blue Beetle, because one of the teases, spoilers. It was a preview page. Have you seen any of the preview pages?
I believe Kevin shared it where it kind of shows Maxwell Lord getting killed instead.
Yeah. Like, that's reversed. And it does look like Blue Beetle and OMAC, you know, on the cover. So.
Oof. Hell yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But anyways.
Yeah, we plugged ourselves.
We plugged ourselves. In the episode. So in case you were dozing off, at Mark Reed's Comics, at CB_Legion, follow Clay at Fanboy. I don't know. What's your thing?
Wow, at Fanboy Clay. Come on.
I didn't know if it was like Fanboy Comic Clay or Fan Clay.
Nah.
I don't find you that interesting to know what your Twitter handle is.
Ouch.
I love you, buddy. I'm sorry.
Well, I think we're going to call it there. I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to go eat some tacos, watch some Disney Plus with my wife before work.
What are you going to see?
And, I don't know. I think she wants to watch... she has a really big fascination with Swiss Family Robinson back in like the 40s. So I think we're going to try to watch that, but I'm not sure.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
Like how are you not watching a Goofy movie?
Oh, that is my, like, one of my all-time favorite Disney movies. I actually have it, like, right behind me over here. You know, I would watch that, like, at least once a month.
I have, like, a whole bunch of buddies of mine. They're like, yeah, I got it. I'm like, oh, I've already seen Endgame. I'm going to see. I'm like, eh. I mean,
why are you watching movies that have already, like, came out within the last year? No. See, for me, I watched 2 episodes of X-Men the Animated Series, 4 episodes of Spider-Man the Animated Series. I'm going to watch the Mighty Ducks Animated Series, which, if nobody knows that, go watch it right now. It's flipping amazing. But I'm also probably going to dive back into Boy Meets World.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember I had a crush on Topanga back then.
Yeah.
And Kelly Kapowski, but that's not Disney. Anyways.
All right.
You enjoy Disney Plus. I'll enjoy it once all the bugs are gone. And, you know, I'm really getting it because I'm interested in Disney. Even though I can get ESPN Plus right now, but the fact that I can get all of it with ESPN Plus is, you know, 30 for 30 is what gets me excited. Because, I don't know. Like, you know, I own most of the Disney stuff, movies. But the animated stuff is what's more exciting. I don't get excited for MCU, so I don't care. Although my son loves it. I mean, his favorite movie is Black Panther. So, I mean, he has his own issues.
Nice.
All right, buddy. I will talk to you next week. And again, if you like our show, subscribe, rate, review, like, 5-star. If you hate Clay, give us a 5-star and then say that you hate him. If you like me, 5-star and say you like me. Besides that, talk to you guys next week. See ya.
See ya.